I was this nervous, this on edge about what was going to happen to the rest of my life, was the day I married Alexa. And we know how that fucking turned out. I looked over at my, for once, conservatively dressed ex-wife. She, of course, stared straight ahead, not returning my stare. That woman was a piece of work. Finally, Walliford finished shuffling papers around and cleared his throat before diving into a bunch of formalities for the record.
Docket number 179920-16, Jagger versus Jagger. Petition for reduction in custody. Cross motion to compel relocation and enforce the previous signed custody agreement.
Then he finally looked up.
Before I get started with my decisions, I'd like to take a moment to say that this was not an easy case. I had to consider the rights of both parties present in this courtroom, the rights of a biological father who was robbed of years of bonding with his son, as well as what is in the best interest of the boy.
He looked straight at Alexa.
Miss Jagger, I hold you largely accountable for the mess we have here today. If you had one inkling of a doubt that your husband might not be the boy's father, you had a duty to get to the truth when that blessed child was born.
For the first time, I felt a sudden pang of hope. Walliford had never shown his hand, and I'd assumed he'd fallen for the southern charm Alexa had been laying on thick since day one. What came out of his mouth next shocked the shit out of me even more.
Mr. Jagger, I'd like to commend you on your devotion to young Beckett. It's clear that you love and care for the child no differently than if things had turned out differently with the results of the paternity test some years ago.
Inwardly, I jumped into the air and fist-pumped, but somehow I managed to feign humility. Thank you, Your Honor. That means a lot coming from you.
Right. Well, that being said, let's get to the business at hand today. On Ms. Jagger's petition for a change in custody, I find no circumstances that warrant a modification. The order setting the visitation of Andrew M. Jagger is hereby affirmed without change.
He looked at Alexa.
Ms. Jagger, the fact that your petition to increase custody was in order to allow Mr. Bodine to start to have visitation with your son is a step in the right direction. However, it has not gone unnoticed that Mr. Bodine has not once made an appearance during these proceedings. To be quite frank, his lack of interest and participation makes me question his priorities and interest in his son's life. Regardless, he is the boy's father, and I'm going to grant Mr. Bodine some visitation. However, this time will come out of your time with your son, not Mr. Jagger's time. This court hereby grants Levi Bodine's petition for custody in the amount of 8 hours per week. After a relationship is established and Mr. Bodine has proven to this court his desire to be involved in his son's life, I'll consider additional visitation. However, this likely will also come from your time, Ms. Jagger.
I stood before the court utterly dumbfounded. Mentally, I was busting through the yellow tape at the finish line with my hands held high as I finished the almost 4-week-long marathon I'd been running. I just couldn't believe I'd won. Behind me, Roman let out a triumphant yes, and I stood there stunned, feeling like it was a dream, and any second I was going to wake up to have the nightmare of reality hit me. Then Judge Walliford finished.
Lastly, on Mr. Jagger's cross-motion to compel Alexa and Beckett Jagger's relocation to their home in New York City, that motion is denied.
Wait, what? Your Honor, if I am retaining my visitation, how can you deny my motion for my son's return home?
Isn't that obvious, Mr. Jagger? Your son is going to be here in the great state of Georgia. You might want to think about relocating.
He banged his gavel and stood to leave the courtroom.
This is bullshit. I have a practice in New York. Alexa doesn't even have a job here.
Walliford froze mid-step.
That'll be $1,000 for using that language and tone in my courtroom. You don't like my decision? Take it up with the Court of Appeals.
I held the bathroom wall to keep myself upright long enough to take a piss, then stumbled from the bathroom back to my bar stool. Tie and jacket, God knows where, zippers still open, shirt half tucked in and half hanging out. I looked as trashed as I felt. "I'll have another on the rocks." I slid my highball glass toward the bartender. He looked at Roman, then at me. "You gotta ask my father's permission or something? Just give me the damn drink." Did I mention I'm an even bigger dick than usual when I'm drunk? My cell phone jumped around on top of the bar. Emery. It was the third time she'd called. Also the third time I didn't answer.
"Not gonna answer that again?" Roman asked.
I slurred.
"What's the point?"
"How about to let the lady have a good night's sleep tonight? God knows you're gonna have one when you pass out by 5 p.m., you selfish prick."
Roman drew on his beer and set it down on the bar.
"She loves you. You'll work it out."
"Work what out? It's over."
"What are you talking about? Don't be an asshole. It's the first woman I've ever really seen you fall for. How long we been friends?"
"Too long, apparently, if you're going to start lecturing me."
"What did I tell you in the back of the church right before you married Alexa?"
In the condition I was in, most of my life was blurry, but that morning was always crystal clear. I'd thought about Roman offering me his keys to split on more than one occasion since. "Car is in the back if you want to bail," he'd said. When I'd reminded him Alexa was carrying my baby and I was doing the right thing, he'd said, "Fuck the right thing." The bartender brought my drink, and since I was still able to remember a portion of my life I had no desire to recollect, I promptly sucked back half the glass. Then I turned to look at Roman. Well, two Romans.
"You never did say I told you so."
He shook his head.
"Nope. Won't say it if you don't take my advice and figure shit out with Emery either. Not much on rubbing bad choices in people's faces."
"Sometimes a choice is made for you by circumstance."
Roman chuckled.
"That's crap, and you know it." He paused.
"Remember Nancy Irvine?"
It took me a minute to reach back into the depths of my alcohol-marinated brain.
"Chickenpox girl?"
He tilted his beer in my direction.
"That's the one."
"What about her?"
"Remember the pact we made never to go for the same girl?"
"Yeah."
"Well, after you move to Atlanta and leave Emery heartbroken because you're too stupid to try to figure out how to make it work, I'll be there to comfort her, among other things."
"Payback's a bitch."
"Fuck you."
"What do you care? She's just pussy to keep you busy. Not worth your trouble."
As if on cue, my phone lit up with Emery's name, indicating a text had arrived. I grabbed it and my drink from the bar and stood. Wobbling on my feet, I leaned into my friend.
"Fuck you."
Then I stormed off to find the hotel elevator. Chapter 41. If I could have just cracked open my skull and let a few of the little trapped drummers out, I might have had a chance of getting up off my couch. It was a fucking miracle I'd gotten onto the plane at all. Would never have happened had it not been for Roman, who dragged my hungover ass from that hotel room this morning at 6 a.m. Now it was noon. I'd been home for more than an hour, and I finally grew a set of balls and responded to Emery. I texted back. Yeah, balls, sure. And I lied. It wasn't the first time. Certainly wouldn't be the last. Drew. Sorry about last night, was sick as a dog, food poisoning, bad sushi, I think. The little dots started jumping around immediately. Emery. Just glad you're okay, I was worried what happened in court. Admitting the truth would mean dealing with it, and I wasn't ready yet. Drew. Judge adjourned handing down his decision until next week. Emery. Sigh. Okay. Well, maybe that's good. He's really giving it attention. I couldn't be a dick when she was trying so hard to remain positive. Drew. Maybe. Emery. When are you coming back? That was when I started to feel like a real shithead. It was one thing to hold off telling her about the decision. In my head, I could justify that as avoiding hurting her. But sitting upstairs lying to her when she was probably downstairs answering my phone, that was just being a coward. That realization didn't make me any less of an asshole, though. True. Probably get the last flight out tonight. It'll be late by the time I'm back. Emery, can't wait to see you. I finally said something that wasn't a lie.
True.
Yeah, me too.
There was a mirror in the lobby that reflected the hallway leading back to the private offices. I halted when I caught sight of Emery.
So fucking beautiful. So sweet and honest and everything good.
My palms began to sweat as I stood there watching her. Her door was closed, and she was writing something on the whiteboard, probably something positive about making things work that would make me feel like an even bigger scumbag when I read it. I'd spent the last 24 hours thinking of how it should go down, what would hurt her the least. There was no reason to tell her what had happened in court. She believed relationships could endure anything if two people worked at it. There was no doubt in my mind she'd want to try staying together while we'd be separated by almost 900 miles. At first, it might even seem to work. But eventually, shit would start to fall apart. It always does. We probably wouldn't even realize how bad things had gotten until it blew up in our faces. Emery had just settled into her new life in New York. Letting her live it was the right thing to do. So all I could seem to come up with was getting it over with quickly. Don't drag this shit out and try to do the long-distance thing, because that will just waste more of her time. She wasted 3 years of her life hanging on to that asshole Baldwin. I wasn't about to lead her on like that. Fast and complete detachment, like ripping off a band-aid. The sting hurts like a motherfucker, but then when you let the fresh air in, you go from covering up a wound to healing. She capped the marker and took a step back, reading whatever she'd just written. A slow smile spread across her face, and the headache I'd finally just gotten rid of rushed back with a vengeance. I took a deep breath and headed to my office. Emery stepped out of hers just as I was about to pass.
"Hey, sleepyhead."
She wrapped her arms around my neck.
"Too bad you didn't take a little longer. I was about to go upstairs to wake you."
She kissed me on the lips and added,
"Naked?"
"Emery," I cleared my throat because my voice was pathetically cracking. "We need to..." I never got to finish my sentence because before I could even add the word talk, both our phones started ringing, and the UPS guy yelled from the lobby. Instead of ignoring it, I jumped at the reprieve like the no-balls jerk I was. Then, after the UPS guy left, the building super came to talk to me about some work they were going to do where they'd need to cut the water for about 2 hours tomorrow. By the time I'd extricated myself from that conversation, my client had showed up 20 minutes early for his appointment. I couldn't very well make him wait in the lobby while I dumped my girlfriend, so my conversation with Emery was going to be delayed for at least an hour. But one appointment ran into the next, and 1 hour ran into two, and suddenly it was almost 7 o'clock at night. Emery had done nothing but smile and look happy to have me back all day. She'd even ordered me lunch and sat in the lobby bullshitting with one of my clients for 10 minutes so I could gobble down the food. Now all of my excuses were gone, and the office was quiet. I stared out my window, drinking the coffee that had magically appeared on my desk a half hour ago, when Emery came into my office. I knew this because of the click-clack of her heels, not because I turned around. She came up behind me and wrapped her hands around my waist.
"Crazy day?"
"Yeah. Thanks for everything. For lunch, coffee, answering the phones and door all day. Everything." She leaned her head against my back.
"Of course. We're a good team, don't you think?"
I closed my eyes. "Damn. Just rip the band-aid off, Drew, you pussy. Rip it the fuck off." I swallowed and turned around to face her. "Emery, I'm not cut out to be on a team." She laughed, probably not yet fully understanding what I was saying. Then she looked up and saw my somber face. Her smile wilted.
"What are you talking about? You're a great team player. I pick up where you need me to, and you do the same for me."
"Rip the fucking band-aid off. Fast." "No, Emery, that's what an employee does for their employer. We're not a team." She looked like she'd been hit with a physical blow. Her plump bottom lip quivered for a half a second,
and then she regrouped, her entire demeanor changing. Arms that had been casually at her side folded into a protective stance over her chest, and she straightened her spine. The fucked up thing was, for a brief second, I got turned on watching her jump into fight mode. After all, arguing was how we'd started this mess to begin with. But it was definitely not the time or place to think with my dick. Every relationship goes through periods where one person needs to lean on the other more. There will come a day when all need to lean on you. The relationship counselor in her kicked in, and I realized I needed to be blunt. So rather than ripping off the band-aid, I sliced open a new wound. I don't want you to lean on me, Emery. I need to end things between us. She took a step back, so I stepped up to the plate again and slammed home. My son is my priority, and there isn't room for anything else in my life. Emery's voice was a whisper. I understand. I'm sorry. Force of habit, I reached out to touch her shoulder, give her comfort, but she backed away like my hand was fire. Looking down, she said, I left your messages on the desk, and your first appointment was moved up to 7:30. There was so much I should have said, but all I did was nod, which she didn't even see. Emery walked to the door of my office, and all I wanted to do was take back the last 5 minutes, rewind time, and tell her I didn't just want to be her teammate, I wanted to be her whole fucking team. But instead I stood there and watched her walk away. Because it would only be harder a month from now, or a year from now. Long-distance relationships don't fucking work. One of us would be a hell of a lot worse off when time passed and someone cheated. Emery disappeared into her office and came back out a moment later, wearing her coat with her laptop and purse slung over her shoulder. She gently pulled her office door closed. So gently, I almost didn't even hear her leaving. Maybe that was the point. But I did, and when I looked up to catch one last glimpse of her, I saw that she was crying. I had to grip the chair in front of me in order to keep myself from going after her. Then she was gone. And as I stood in place for the next hour with shit whirling through my mind, all I could think was, who was I trying to protect here? Her? Or me? Chapter 42. I didn't think it was possible to get any more miserable than I'd been the last week. Alexa and I had fought for an hour when I picked up Beck. And then she started in right where she'd left off when I brought him back 2 days later. My son hadn't felt well all weekend, and wanted to know why we couldn't go home to my place anymore. I didn't know what to tell him, and the longer I left shit in limbo, the harder it was getting. To make matters worse, my flight back to New York was delayed for 6 hours, and the last decent night's sleep I'd had was the night before the judge handed down his decision. Even the flight attendant asked me if I was feeling okay. The truth of the matter was, I wasn't feeling okay. I was fucking miserable trying to figure out my move to Atlanta, although that wasn't the real reason for my recent hatred of life. By the time my flight landed at JFK, it was midnight. I was so exhausted from lack of sleep, I thought I might actually pass out tonight, finally get some desperately needed shut-eye. But then I made the mistake of stopping in the office, just to look around. It was quiet. I didn't expect Emery to be here this late. She'd avoided me at all costs before I left for Atlanta anyway, coming to the office only to meet her in-person appointments and leaving immediately after. I presumed she was doing the rest of her working from home. Plus, having access to my schedule, she'd have known I was due back earlier in the evening, so I was certain she'd be staying away. I dropped my bags at the reception desk and walked through the eerily silent office. Emery's door was closed, and I tried my hardest to pass it by, but I just couldn't do it. Even though I was relatively certain no one was in there, I knocked first, then slowly creaked the door open. It was dark, but the hall light illuminated enough for me to see inside, although I was sure the darkness had me imagining things, so I flipped the light on. My heart leaped into my throat as I froze and stared. Empty. The office was fucking empty. I blinked a few times, hoping my eyes were playing tricks on me, but nope. She was gone. For good this time. I need you to tail someone for me.
Good fucking morning to you too, sunshine.
Roman plopped down into the guest chair on the other side of my desk. When I texted him at 6 this morning, he was already on his way to my place. Since I hadn't slept all night and decided to make productive use of my insomnia, I told him to meet me in the office.
There's nothing good about it.
I tossed the file in my hand on the desk and rubbed my eyes.
You look like shit, man.
Roman leaned back in his chair and lifted his boot-covered feet onto my desk, crossing them at the ankles. Normally I'd knock them off, but I didn't care enough this morning.
All the traveling has caught up to me.
Yeah, that's the reason.
What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing.
What do you need?
I want you to tail Emery for me.
What the fuck for? Isn't she across the hall from you half the day?
She moved out.
When did that happen?
Sometime over the last few days, I assume. Got back at midnight and her office was cleared out.
Guess that explains you looking like you haven't slept in 2 days.
I just need to know if she found a new place to rent. I found a small house to lease down in Atlanta. Dave Monroe is going to join me part-time here, taking over some of the work that my clients won't care if I don't handle personally. Between that and working remotely, I'm thinking I can come back twice a month for a few days instead of the back and forth every week. There's no reason she can't stay here. It would be easy to avoid me.
So you're really doing it? Going to leave your practice and move to Atlanta?
What choice do I have? I'll appeal, but there's no guarantee it'll change anything. Beck feels the limbo I'm in. I can't live in a hotel room. He'll never settle without being able to have his own place to sleep and keep his things. He needs to feel like he's at home, that I'm there if he needs me. School events, doctor's appointments. He just made a peewee hockey team. What would I do when his games were on days I was in New York every week? Plus, I can't go back and forth 52 times a year, cramming 40 hours of work in 2 days. It's tough after a while.
How long is the lease of the house you found?
1 year. My shoulders slumped.
Figure it'll take 9 months before I even get a date for oral arguments on my custody appeal.
You sign it yet?
Not yet.
Meeting with the landlord when I go back down at the end of the week.
Good. Give me a few more days.
For what?
I got a guy down in Atlanta working on something for me.
Do I even want to know?
Roman smiled.
Fuck no. Then you can't be implicated. It was the first time I'd laughed since... I wasn't sure when. That was Roman, a man with a plan who always had my back.
Well, whatever it is, thanks.
So what do you want done on Emery? Just Taylor? How about a hint on what I'm looking for?
I just need to know she's okay. See if she found office space and if it's in a safe neighborhood.
Roman raised a brow.
So you don't want me to find out if she's fucking someone?
I clenched my jaw so hard I nearly cracked a tooth. No. If you find that out, don't even tell me that shit. Especially if it's that asshole Baldwin, because he'll just screw her over.
Like you?
What the hell does that mean? I didn't screw her over. I got screwed over. I'm doing what's best for her.
Roman stood. Not gonna fight with you, buddy. I'll tail her if that's what you want. But maybe you should ask yourself if what's best for Emery might be letting her make her own decision on how to handle your relationship.
Chapter 43. You were amazing, Baldwin said from the doorway. I looked up from packing my lecture materials. How long have you been standing there?
I caught the last 5 minutes.
You're being kind. I was a nervous wreck. He smiled.
It gets easier. But seriously, it didn't show.
2 days ago, Baldwin had called to say one of the department's TAs had to leave unexpectedly and asked if I wanted to fill in. It would practically assure me the adjunct faculty position I was interviewing for tomorrow, so I agreed, even though I had zero desire to do anything these days. Getting out of bed was an effort. After I finished packing, I walked to the door. Are you heading to a class?
Nope. Just finished grading papers and wanted to check in on you. How about some lunch? There's a great little bistro a few blocks away that makes the best ahi tuna salad.
For the last month, I'd been avoiding Baldwin out of deference to Drew, but there was no reason to do that anymore. Even though I wasn't much in the mood for company, I knew locking myself in my apartment and being sad wasn't really healthy. Sure, I'd love to. Baldwin and I ate lunch outside, next to the heat lamps, since it was a beautiful afternoon. At one point, I got up to go to the ladies' room, and I spotted a man sitting in a car parked half a block down. The car was at my back while I was eating, so I had no idea how long it had been there, but I could have sworn the man inside was Roman. After we finished lunch, I looked for the car again, but it was already gone. Later in the day, after running my afternoon errands, I went home to do an online counseling session. I couldn't even open the front door all the way because my apartment was crammed with office furniture. It probably wasn't the smartest idea to leave before finding new space, but I just couldn't stay there anymore. Even when Drew wasn't around, all I could think about was him. I'd thought ridding myself of having to see the desk we'd had sex on and the copy room we'd first met in would help me think about him less. Unfortunately, my thoughts traveled with me instead of staying behind at the office. While I was setting up my laptop so my patients wouldn't see the crazy room full of office furniture, a knock came at my door. I hated that I got my hopes up, thinking maybe it was Drew. I was confused when I saw Roman through my peephole. I opened the door. Roman? He stood gripping the top of the doorway.
I've been instructed to tail you.
I thought I saw you at the restaurant today.
Can I come in? I won't take up much of your time.
Sure. Of course, but I should warn you, the place is a mess. I moved my office into my tiny apartment and have no place to put anything, so it's basically taken over my living room. I opened the door as wide as I could, and Roman came in. Can I get you something to drink? He held up his hand.
I'm good.
There were piles of files all over the couch. I started to collect them to make room for him to sit. Do you want to have a seat? Get comfortable so you can tell me why you're following me? He chuckled.
Sure.
I sat down on my office chair across from him and waited for him to begin.
Drew asked me to tail you. He claims he wants to make sure your new office is in a safe neighborhood.
And what if it wasn't? What's he going to do with that information? Roman shrugged.
Shit don't always make sense when a man's in love.
In love? Did you miss the part where he dumped me?
Never thought I'd say this about my best friend. Known the man since elementary school, and he's always had balls of steel, but he's afraid.
Of what?
Of falling in love. Mother cheated on his father and took off when he was a kid. Wife lied to him about the kid she was pregnant with being his, then continued to screw the baby daddy after they were married. He fell in love with that little boy. Then she took being a father away from him. Also gets reminded day in and day out at work how few relationships make it, especially ones where the couples don't spend time together. Finally found some good in his life with you. I hate to see him throw that away because he's too afraid to take a chance. Did he even tell you the judge let Alexa stay in Atlanta, and he's moving there?
No. There was an ache in my chest. The way he'd ended things made a little more sense now. A part of me could understand why Drew would be skeptical that things could work between us. His past had pretty much taught him that when you fall in love, it gets taken away. But that didn't excuse what he'd done. Whether he was justified or not didn't change the fact that he hadn't even tried to fight for us. He hadn't even told me what was happening. I'm sorry for what he's going through, Roman. None of it is fair to him. But even if it were true that he still cared about me, what could I do about it? I can't make him unafraid. He didn't even want to try. That tells me I wasn't worth the risk to him. I need to be worth more than that. Roman nodded.
I get it. It's just, I saw you with that professor today at lunch.
Baldwin and I are friends. Yes, we have history, or I should say I have a history of feelings for Baldwin. But I fell in love with Drew, and that taught me that the feelings I thought I had for Baldwin weren't ever really love. Because it was never like this with Baldwin. What I have for Drew is at a different level. Roman smiled.
You said have, not had.
Of course. I can't turn off feelings just because I was hurt. It's going to take effort to move on from Drew.
Do me a favor. Don't start trying too hard yet. I'm still holding out hope my friend is going to pull his head out of his ass.
Chapter 44. I don't sweat. I've stood up in court and flown by the seat of my pants when a witness changed his testimony and a judge was staring down his nose at me. Nothing. Yet somehow, today I had to blot my forehead, and the paper napkin stuck to my sweaty palms. Why did I have to do this today? I wasn't ready. Beck wasn't ready. But that wouldn't stop my ex-wife. She threatened to tell Beck when I returned him later tonight if I didn't, and though she wasn't a woman of her word, I was certain she'd make good on this threat. It was the second time in as many weeks that I was channeling my father. Rip the band-aid off was his favorite cliché. I only hoped my son's face didn't look anything like Emery's did when I broke things off. I turned to Beck, who was belly laughing watching cartoons, and looked at my watch. Shit. I was out of time to stall. Beck? Buddy? I need to talk to you about something before you go back to Mommy's tonight. Do you think you could turn off the TV? He turned to me, such a sweet, easygoing boy.
Okay, Daddy.
After he got up and grabbed the remote from the desk, he sat back down and turned, giving me his full attention. My mouth was suddenly dry, making it hard to speak. There was no easy way to break this to a kid, no matter how I patted it.
Is everything okay? You look like I do before I barf.
Beck stood.
Do you want me to get you a bucket like you do for me when I barf?
I laughed nervously. No, buddy, I don't need a bucket. At least, I don't think I do. Sit down. It's about me being your daddy. His face fell.
Are you not going to be my daddy anymore? Is that why you won't take me home to your house?
I might need that bucket after all. Oh, God, nothing like that at all. I'm never going to stop being your daddy. But... fuck it. Here it goes. But some kids are lucky and have more than two parents. His eyes lit up.
Are you going to marry Emery?
Jesus. That hurt on so many levels. I don't think that's going to happen, Beck. No. He was getting excited and went off track.
Because Michaela from school has a stepmom. Her parents are divorced like you and Mommy, and now she has two mommies.
No. Well, yes. No. Sort of. The thing is, I'm actually your stepdad.
So I have two dads?
He scrunched up his nose. You do. When you were born, your mom and I were married. I didn't know you weren't my... I felt the words start to bubble in my throat and had to clear it a few times to fight off showing how upset I was. I needed Beck to know what I was telling him would have no effect on our relationship, and my crying wouldn't send the right message. I started again. I didn't know you weren't my son, biologically, until years after you were born.
If you're not my biological dad, then who is?
It's a man named Levi. Mom says you've met him already a few times. His eyes lit up.
The race car driver?
I was emotionally conflicted. While it sucked for me that he was excited about that asshole being related to him, if it made it easier for him to accept the news, I was all for that. Yes? The race car driver.
He drives a cool car. It's got a hood scoop and it's loud.
I forced a smile. Your mom is going to have you start to get to know Levi, but it doesn't mean that anything is going to change between you and me. He thought about everything I'd said for a moment, then asked,
"Do you still love me?"
Beck might be almost seven and starting to get too cool to hold my hand as he walked into school, but all bets were off now. I hoisted him onto my lap and spoke directly into his eyes. I love you more than anything in this world.
So you're not leaving me because I have a new dad?
No, Beck. I'd never leave you. People don't leave when they love someone. They stick around forever. That's why I'm moving to Atlanta. Your mom brought you down here, and I go where you go.
Did my biological dad not love me? And that's why we lived in New York?
Jesus, he had some tough questions. I know it's confusing, but Levi didn't know you were his son when you were born, so he didn't get a chance to know you. Now that he knows, he's gonna love you too, I'm sure. I realized it was time I sat down and had a talk with Levi to make sure my son would be the priority he needed to be. If he was going to be part of his life, he'd better not be a disappointment.
Will he live here too?
I'm not sure, buddy.
But you said people don't leave when they love someone, so he'll only leave if he doesn't love me?
God, I was fucking this up royally. Sometimes you have to leave physically when you love someone, like maybe for work, but you figure out other ways to still be with them every day. When I said people don't leave when they love someone, I didn't mean they had to be there in person every single day. You just have to get more creative to find ways to be together when you can't be there in person. Like you and I did the last month when I had to go back to New York to work.
Like FaceTiming with Mom's iPhone?
Exactly.
Like Snapchatting?
I'm not up on that one, but if you say so. Beck nodded and was silent for a while. It was a lot to take in, especially for a kid his age. To this day, I could barely process it. You have any questions, bud?
Do I still get to call you Dad?
My heart dropped. Yes, you definitely do. I'm always going to be your dad.
What will I call Levi then?
The thought of my son calling another man dad was physically painful, but my own pain didn't matter. I'm sure you, Mom, and Levi will figure that out eventually. A few minutes later, Beck asked if he could turn his cartoons back on. He seemed no worse for the wear. I, on the other hand, felt like I'd just done 10 rounds in a heavyweight fight with my hands tied behind my back. I was mentally and physically exhausted. That night, after I dropped Beck back with Alexa, I laid in my bed at the hotel, replaying our conversation over and over. It was important to me that I stood behind the things I'd said to my son today. Kids learned more from what parents did than what they said. I needed to show him I was here for the long haul, especially because I couldn't control what Levi and Alexa did. As I attempted to fall asleep, one thing kept nagging at the back of my mind and wouldn't let me settle. It was something I'd said. While I believed the words to be true, if I was being honest with myself, I wasn't exactly living up to my own edict. And it had nothing to do with my son. People don't leave when they love someone. They stick around forever. The following morning, my unsettled feeling had sprouted. The root had been there for the last few weeks, but since my talk with Beck, it had grown like a vine and taken up residence in my stomach, my head, and it had coiled around my heart so tightly I could barely breathe. I had to drag myself out of bed so I could get to the airport for my flight. In the back of the cab, I checked my departure time and fidgeted. I knew myself, how I could obsess over shit, and I needed to know. Finally, giving in, I texted Roman at 5 in the morning. Drew, is she seeing someone? As always, he responded within a few minutes. He was the only person I knew who required less sleep than I did. Roman, thought I wasn't supposed to tell you that part. Drew, just tell me. Roman, you sure you can handle it? Jesus Christ, I wasn't actually so sure I could. If he was asking, it wasn't good. Drew, tell me. Roman, the neighbor is moving in on her, sent her some flowers, huge thing of yellow roses. Also took her out to lunch the other day at some fancy place with a big price tag and stupid tiny food. Fuck. Drew. Anything else? Roman. Started tailing him a bit. Took some woman to dinner last night. Tall, great legs. Halfway through dinner, it looked like they had an argument. She pulled some dramatic shit, standing and throwing the napkin on the table, then stormed off. Think he might have dumped her. The unsettled feeling in my gut was there for a goddamn reason. I was going to lose her forever if I didn't get my head out of my ass. Pulling up to the airport, I typed one last text to my friend before exiting the cab. Drew. Thanks, Roman. He immediately typed back. Roman. Go get her. About fucking time. I was almost as nervous as I'd been yesterday when I had to break the news to Beck. But there was also something different about the way I felt. Determined. No matter what it took, I was going to make Emery forgive me and give me another chance. I'd fucked up. I could place blame on a million experiences in my life, but the truth of the matter was, I'd fucked up. And I was about to start fixing it. There was an out-of-order sign in front of two of the elevators in her building. I stood in front of the lone functioning one, tapping my foot as I watched the numbers come down over the doors. It stuck on 9 for 30 seconds, then stopped at 8 for just as long. I don't have time for this. I'd already wasted enough time. Looking around, I saw the sign for the stairs and broke into a jog. My heart pounded as I took them two at a time up to the third floor. Then I was standing in front of Emery's door, and it dawned on me for the first time that I had no idea what I was going to say. 2 hours on the plane, and I hadn't come up with an opening statement. Good thing I'm a fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants kind of guy when it comes to oral arguments. I took a deep breath, steadied myself, and knocked. When the door opened, I realized how completely unprepared I was. Because it was Baldwin staring at me from inside. Chapter 45. Where's Emery?
She's getting dressed. We have a breakfast meeting at the college to attend this morning. Not that it's any of your business.
Professor Putz was still standing inside, and I was the one out in the hall. The symbolism ate at me. I brushed past him and went into Emery's apartment.
Sure, come on in, he mumbled sarcastically.
I turned to face him, folding my hands across my chest. Now leave.
I beg your pardon? I need to speak to Emery alone, so I would appreciate it if you would disappear.
He shook his head.
No.
My brows lifted. I didn't think the peckerhead had it in him. If it were any other time, I might have been impressed with his tenacity. But right now, it just annoyed the shit out of me. I took a step forward. You can either leave on your own or I'll help you leave. Either way, you're leaving. What's it gonna be? Finding I wasn't playing around, he took the smart route and opened the door.
Tell Emery I'll see her at school later.
Yeah, I'll be sure to give her the message. I gave the door a shove, slamming it closed on his heels. Turning around, I found Emery's living room cluttered with office furniture. The place barely had enough room for a couch and chair before. Now it was also filled with a desk, office chairs, file cabinets, computer equipment, and everything else from her office. The door to her bedroom creaked, and Emery walked out, looking down as she scrolled through something on her phone.
I pulled up the psychology department bios on the college's website. Tell me again who we're meeting. I'm so bad with names.
My answer stopped her in her tracks. It's just me and you. Emery's head whipped up, and she blinked a few times as if she were imagining the man standing in her living room.
Drew, what are you doing here?
She looked beyond me.
And where's Baldwin?
Gone?
Gone where?
I looked down at my feet for a minute, then caught her in my gaze. There was a crushing sensation in my chest as I found the same sadness that loomed inside of me behind her eyes. My voice was low and hoarse. Do you love him? She stared at me for long seconds, the wheels in her head turning. I held my breath the entire time. Finally, she shook her head. Thank God. That was all I needed to hear. Anything and everything else we could work out. I could make her forgive me, she could learn to trust me again, but I couldn't make her not be in love with another man. She was still standing in her bedroom doorway, and suddenly there was way too much space between us. I stalked over to her, not giving a shit if it was a caveman move. The overwhelming urge to touch her outweighed any need for etiquette. She didn't move. With every step I took, my heartbeat grew faster. She still didn't move when I reached out, cupped her face in my hands, and slowly brushed my lips against hers, testing the waters. Taking that as a green light, or at least not a bright red flashing one, I went back for more. Planting my lips over her mouth, soft went out the window, and I kissed her hard. She opened, moaning as I pulled her flush against me. The sound shot right to my dick, and the hard kiss quickly elevated to a frenzy. She smelled amazing, tasted as sweet as I remembered, and the feel of her body pressed to mine was better than I'd ever experienced. God, I was such a fucking idiot. How could I have ever walked away from this? The kiss went on for a long time. When it broke, it didn't take long for her doubt and fear to creep back in, not to mention anger. "You can't just show up," my lips crashed down on hers, cutting her off. This time she tried to fight me. She gave one weak shove to my chest, which only made me wrap my arms around her tighter. Eventually her fight went limp and she gave in again. When our kiss broke, I left my lips inches from hers as a reminder that I'd be on her in less than a heartbeat if she started again. "Just give me a minute before you rip into me, okay?" 60 seconds, she said. The corner of my lip twitched. God, I missed that mouth. And not just the feel of her soft lips and submissive tongue. I missed her sass. Brushing two fingers across her cheek, I gave it to her straight. My voice was raw as I laid it all at her feet. "I love you." A hopeful smile rose on her beautiful face. But then she remembered. She remembered what I'd done to her the last few weeks, and her smile fell. "You have a funny way of showing it. You love me, so you dumped me?" The judge didn't change my visitation schedule with Beck, but he allowed Alexa to stay in Atlanta. I have to move. "I know all about it. Roman told me."
"Roman?"
"Yes, Roman. What the fuck?" "Don't you what the fuck me. At least Roman had the courtesy to fill me in on why you were acting like an asshole."
"I was scared."
"So was I. But I didn't walk away." I looked down. "I know. I could give you a million excuses about why I did what I did, try to justify myself, but all those reasons lead back to one thing." I paused and then spoke into her eyes. "I was afraid."
"And now? Now you're not afraid anymore?"
I shook my head. "I finally realized I was more afraid of losing you than I was of taking a chance and getting hurt. Guess you can say I grew a pair of balls." She softened. It looked like she wanted to believe me, but was skeptical. I couldn't say I blamed her.
"How do I know they're not going to shrivel up and disappear again?"
Her voice cracked.
"You really hurt me, Drew."
"I'm so sorry. And I know right now my word isn't worth much to you. But I swear to God, Em, if you give me another chance, I won't fuck things up this time." Her eyes welled up.
"You'll be living in Atlanta, and I'll be here every day, some days working at the college with Baldwin. How would it even work?"
"However you need it to work. We'll take turns. One week you'll come to Atlanta, one week I'll come to New York, or every other if that's too much on you. And we'll do a fuck of a lot of sexting and FaceTiming. I don't have it all planned yet, but we'll figure it out. It won't be easy, but it'll be worth it." "I love you, Emery. I'd go 364 days thirsty if it meant I got to drink you in for just one." A tear slid down her cheek, and I caught it with my thumb. "Please tell me these are happy tears, Em."
"I don't think a long-distance relationship will work."
"We'll make it work. Please, please give me another chance." She shook her head rapidly.
"No,
but..." I attempted to change her mind, but this time she silenced me. Emery pressed her lips to mine. The kiss was filled with so many crazy emotions that I could feel them pulsing through my veins and into our connection. When we finally broke, she was panting and I was in a fucking panic. She's saying goodbye.
"It won't work long distance."
"Em, we'll make it work."
"No. I'm going with you to Atlanta."
"We'll figure it."
"Wait.
What?" I stared at her, incredulous.
"Repeat that?" "I said I'm going with you to Atlanta."
"What about the job you applied for at the college? Your patients?"
"I'm a TA for the rest of this semester. I just interviewed for the guest adjunct position. They may not even hire me. The semester ends in 3 months. We'll commute back and forth until then. With a little experience on my resume, maybe I'll have an easier time finding a part-time adjunct job down there. And most of my clients are portable. They were doing video counseling sessions before. Maybe I'll even keep a few and come back and forth while you keep your clients here."
You need to be near your son, and I want to get to know him too. He's part of you.
You're serious? You almost gave me a heart attack saying long distance wasn't going to work.
She smiled. Good. Serves you right after what you've put me through the last few weeks.
Without warning, I lifted her into the air. She yelped, but the smile on her face told me she was happy. Her legs wrapped around my waist, arms wrapped around my neck, and I squeezed her so hard I worried I might hurt her.
God, I fucking love you.
You better.
I do.
I took her mouth in another kiss and walked with her in my arms until I could find a clear surface to set her down on. That surface happened to be the kitchen counter, which also happened to be the perfect height. My dick was already hard, feeling her heat through my pants. Somehow we managed to rip each other's clothes off while keeping connected the entire time. I sucked beneath her earlobe, and my fingers explored the crack of her ass while she unbuckled my pants. When my pants fell to the ground, I slipped down my underwear, and my cock bobbed against my stomach. Looking between us, I said, "We missed you." She laughed.
"I missed you both, too?"
I needed to be inside her so bad. "The foreplay is going to be short, but I'll make it up to you on the back end. It'll be post-play instead." I reached down and grabbed my cock, lowering it to half-mast so I could use it to rub her wetness all over her. She was slick and ready, and I was impatient as hell, so I pushed inside. Emery looked down between us, watching my cock disappear inside of her as I slowly pushed in. When I was fully seated, I lifted her chin. "Watching you watch me put my cock inside of you is the sexiest thing I've ever seen in my life." She smiled.
"I'm glad, because I really liked watching it."
I stroked her cheek with my thumb. "On second thought, this smile right here, this might be the sexiest thing I've ever seen in my life." I began to move, slowly at first, gliding in and out. Something was different about this time, like all the barriers between us had been removed, and I was finally free to love her. I kissed her lips gently. "I love you." She searched my eyes.
"I love you too, Drew. I didn't know it until I felt the real thing, but I'm not sure I was ever really in love before I met you."
It felt like she'd given me a crown. In that moment, I was a fucking king. I wasn't sure what I'd done to deserve her, but I was greedy enough not to care. She was mine to keep, and I planned on keeping her forever this time. Even though it had been only a few weeks since the last time I was inside of her, that was way too long. I tried to go slow, but when she tightened her legs around me and her pussy clenched, fisting my cock, I knew I wasn't going to last long. She liked it when I talked during sex, so I whispered everything I wanted to do to her in her ear. How I couldn't wait to rub my face in her pussy, how I wanted to cum all over her tits, and how later I was going to bend her over the counter she was sitting on and take her from behind, finishing all over ass cheeks that would be hot and red from my hand stinging them. She moaned loudly, yelling my name and begging for me to go harder. I sped up my pace, and after I felt her body spasm all around me, I came long and hard inside of her. There was no way the neighbors didn't hear our spectacular finish, and I certainly hoped one in particular had enjoyed hearing it. After our breathing calmed, I wiped a stray hair from her cheek and looked into her sated blue eyes. "So, you're really moving to Atlanta with me?"
"I am.
I found a little house with a yard that's available to rent. Maybe you can come see it, and we can decide if we want something bigger."
"I've been living in this shoebox for 6 months. Anything will seem bigger."
"It's got 3 bedrooms, a big bathtub, and the landlord told me I could repaint it if I want to."
"Are you saying you'll allow me to add color to your life?"
"I'm saying you already have. You're the red in my black and white world."
Epilogue. 1 year later. Did you get it? Roman reached into his jacket pocket and pulled out an envelope.
"Right here." He shook his head. "Still can't believe you pulled this shit off."
I spotted Drew coming down the hall. "Put it away. Here he comes." Roman slipped the envelope back into his pocket and pulled out a flask instead. Twisting off the cap, he offered it to me.
Swig.
No, thanks. Drew walked in as Roman put the beat-up old metal flask to his lips.
You still carry that thing around with you? Never know when you'll need a shot of Hennessy, my friend.
I was surprised Drew hadn't started doing shots after the last few days. I'd pretty much driven him crazy getting ready for tonight. My parents would be arriving in the next few minutes, and a half dozen of Beck's friends were coming, too. Even though we'd lived in Atlanta for nearly a year now, it was really the first time we'd be having company. Well, except for Roman, who didn't count as a guest. He was always family to Drew, and over the last year he'd become my family, too. He was the annoying brother I'd always wanted. Sometimes when he'd visit, I'd find him on the couch playing video games with Drew at 2 in the morning. Other times, he'd make Drew miss his flight when he had business in New York because he'd dragged him out on a stakeout. But all the time, he was there for us. Most people got scars from the chicken pox. Drew got a treasured friend for life. Somehow that made sense with those two. Beck came barreling in from the yard. His clothes were drenched, and brown water dripped from his little head.
I watered the garden.
Did you water the garden, or did the garden water you? I pointed to the bathroom. Go take a bath before everyone gets here.
Can I just go in the pool naked?
He jumped up and down, holding his hands in the praying position. No, you can't go in the pool naked. The neighbors will see you. Beck pouted and slumped his shoulders before turning to drag his feet en route to the bathroom.
Roman and I are going to pick up beer, Drew announced. Need anything while I'm out? Pick up the cake you ordered?
My parents are swinging by the bakery on their way here. It's a tradition that they pay for the cake. Don't ask, I lied.
Drew kissed me on the cheek. Whatever you want.
Then he whispered.
By the way, you didn't seem to mind if the neighbors saw you when you were naked in the pool the other night.
I suppose he had a point. Although, in my defense, we'd just had Beck for 3 weeks while his mother was on her honeymoon in Bali. I'd had a glass of wine, and Drew had just come back from the gym, so his muscles were particularly bulgy. Plus, it was dark out, and hell, have I mentioned that his muscles were particularly bulgy? 10 minutes later, I'd just finished prepping the melon ball salad when the doorbell rang. My smiling parents greeted me with arms in the air.
Happy Gotcha Day!
After coming inside to go to the bathroom, I stood watching the party in the yard from the kitchen window for a few minutes. Everything was going great. My parents were talking to Drew's new law partner and his wife. Roman was flirting with the single mom of one of Beck's best friends. I might have mentioned the other's single status to each of them ahead of time. And Beck was climbing in the treehouse he and his father had spent 4 months building after we moved here. And today was Gotcha Day. My parents were here, and this year was going to be even more special than ever. From the yard, Drew caught me watching and excused himself from conversation with one of his new friends. He slipped into the house and came up behind me, wrapping his arms around my waist and joining me to gaze out the window.
What are we looking at?
My life.
Yeah.
He turned me around and gave me a sweet kiss.
Now I'm looking at mine, too.
My heart sighed. I love it when you sweet-talk me.
Last night you loved it when I dirty-talked you.
I wrapped my arms around his neck. Maybe I just love you.
I am pretty awesome.
Rolling my eyes, I laughed.
Egomaniac.
Drew kissed me on the forehead.
Your parents are anxious to have cake. I think your mom has a sweet tooth.
My parents had started bugging me about the cake the minute they walked in, only not for the reason Drew thought. The sun had started to set, and it was probably an hour past the time I should have been serving cake, but I was stalling. A sudden case of nerves had hit me, after more than 6 months of anxiously waiting for this time to get here. I promised Beck he could help carry the cake. Why don't you make a pot of coffee and I'll go grab him? I found Beck. And he raced to the house when I told him it was time. He smiled from ear to ear, and it brought back so many memories of the excitement of my first Gotcha Day. Seeing his son's excited face, Drew said,
"That must be some cake."
It's in my room. Uncle Roman said he put it under my pillow because he's better than a fairy. Beck yelled over his shoulder, already halfway.